Thanks, Bevan. As you would all know, we from time to time have panels rather than one person speaking about something. And I was thinking about during the week why we do that and what difference that makes. And I guess sometimes we don't know what to speak.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Excellent.
Good.
Take over,
John. I'll go home. My little dog loves me.
Right. Are we all settled? Deep breath. Yes, sometimes we have people who come and have a particular expertise in something, like many years of studying Old Testament or church history or whatever. But as individuals, we have knowledge and we have experience of our own. And that's kind of why we have panels sometimes. And what my hope would be is that as you listen to these people talk about their journey with the Bible, that at the end, or as we go, there may be things that you disagree with, there may be things that you think, oh, that's very different from my understanding. Or you might say, yes. And whatever you say or however you respond, my trust is that God will perhaps challenge us, invite us to rethink, to think things, to whatever. So as we listen, let's listen to God as well. So, Jennifer, you are going first, at least for this question. So when did you first encounter the Bible, and how did you respond to it? Okay. Good.
This little Bible was given to me when I was baptised in the Anglican Church by my godmother, who I never met in a time when I could remember her after I was a baby, and she moved overseas and out of our lives. But I'm not sure at what age I grabbed hold of it and knew it was mine, but I don't remember it ever not being mine. And I was always under my pillow, and I always knew that it was special.
I first encountered the Bible as a number of disconnected stories at various Sunday schools from about 4 or 5 years of age. I think the first time was the Church of Christ, but my father's mother, every time she came down, if I wasn't attending a Sunday school, she'd start me at a different one, depending on, as I got older, I could walk further. And to me, the Bible was just like any other book of stories for children. From about 10 years of age, I did start to feel challenged by Sunday school lessons and by the scripture teacher at Wesley College, Dr. Trenham, which I attended from 9 years of age. At 11 years of age, I decided I could not believe in the supernatural. This came to a head strangely by a discussion on water divining at school. I told my father, who at that time was not attending a church, that I'd decided to give up Sunday school. He said it would please him if I continued. That was the Methodist Sunday school. And I did continue. After this, I decided, in a trolley bus, returning from a swimming lesson at the Claremont Swimming Baths, they don't exist anymore, do they? That I would try and live as if the gospel was true. I think I'm going on to all the questions.
Yeah, that's all right. No, that's okay. Thanks, John.
I have all the answers written down and I just kept reading.
No, that's all right.
And then the song's got all the answers.
All my answers.
I grew up in a conservative evangelical family. I went to a conservative evangelical church. The Bible was extremely important. It was just there in a very, very strong presence sense. And it was the inspired word of God. It was infallible. It was inerrant. All that stuff. And I just never questioned it at that age.
So, Jenny, I guess as a very small child, did you have a particular response other than that it was something was a gift? Or how has your responding attitude to the Bible or whatever changed? Whether there were turning points or just a general evolution?
I don't know how old I was, but I fairly early on, I remember trying to read it, and mine was not a house in which the Bible was read. So I had this sort of sense that my parents would not be that keen on me reading it, so I used to read it when they weren't around, I had a torch. And but I had this sense that it was important to read it, but I had absolutely no idea what the words meant. But that didn't... My recognition that there was something in there worth reading was not matched by what I found when I tried to read it. Nothing. Even I didn't even have any sense of narrative. The only sense I had as a child reading it was the who of it, not the what. There's no propositional sense and no sense of narrative. There was just there was somebody in there.
And then how has that changed over time for you?
Well, I guess the next bit goes to the next problem.
A bigger one.
A bigger one. I think that continued right through to I was about 15 or 16. And then I recognised that part of my barrier to understanding what I was reading was a literary one, that I couldn't understand it because the words were too hard for me. And then I found out that there were other versions of the Bible. I didn't go to church all most of this time, so I was kind of puffing about on my own. And when I was 16, I took myself off on the train into Sydney and found, I think it was a Bible House or something like that, and they sold Bibles there. So I spent some time going through them and bought a new English Bible with a book on top. Don't know why, I just thought if there's more of it, I better have the one that had the most in it. Took that home, and great relief, started plowing through that, found it was a little easier. But I still had a sense that I was missing the meaning of what I was reading. I could now understand the words, but I'd always had an intuitive sense of a tangible God, but what I was reading didn't connect me with that. And so I think the big turning point for me was once I prayed a prayer, and I prayed that God would enable me to read it. And then I remember the day I opened it and read it and thought, now the who that is tangible nearby and the words matched. They kind of went together. It's not a very good description, but something like that.
And so since then, where roughly was that in your life?
About 16, 17.
Okay.
And then I started going to church. Yeah. So I know it's all the wrong way around, but...
Yes, but... You never did things the normal way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Sometime, if I can't remember, when I was an adult, I started collecting different versions of the Bible. I sometimes find that it helps me to read the same passage in different versions. I must admit my favourite is the Standard Revised Version of the New Testament, or the Bible. But just occasionally I get some extra information out of something I bought called the Expanded Bibles. some such thing, Amplified, I think it's called, which has a sort of commentary on the passage sometimes.
Yeah, well, sort of from your first encounters with the Bible, which you mentioned being the very fundamental, yeah, how have things evolved, changed? Have there been particular turning points, or
Not too long.
I think over a period of time, I've got more and more into the teachings of Jesus. There's no doubt about that. And when I was quite young, I was particularly attracted to the teachings of Jesus because I found them to be unearthly, inhuman. They weren't. Nowadays, we use phrases like counterintuitive and countercultural. Just at that time, it seemed to me that he was saying stuff that was very sensible. It just wasn't the way people normally operated. And I got more and more interested in the teachings of Jesus. Then, about 12 years ago, something happened which just turned everything upside down. And it's one of those moments when you're reading the Bible and a verse leaps out and hits you. Obviously, a lot of people here know what that feels like. Nobody's nodding. Thank you. This happened to me. I was reading Matthew chapter 23, and the words of verse 10 leapt off the page and hit me really hard in the head. That's the only way I can describe it. And the words of Jesus was talking to his disciples, and he said, "You have one teacher." So do not let anybody call you teacher. You have one teacher, and that is the Christ. And I thought, good grief, supposing he meant it. That was my first thought, was good grief, supposing he meant it. There seems to be a lot of things to say about the words of Jesus. From that time, I've been thinking, I've been praying, I've been researching, I've been discussing. And for the last 3.5 years, I've been studying the poets with some people with ages of PhDs and stuff like that who really know their Bibles. And I'm still asking this question. For me, the question probably comes down to, if we say that the Bible, if Jesus is our only teacher, then what about all those other bits in the Bible? And if we say that the other bits in the Bible are also inspired by God, then does that mean that we are elevating the teachings of people, Paul, Jude, whoever it might happen to be? Are we elevating those teachings and giving them the same level of authority as the teachings of the Son of God? This seems to me to be the central question. All that time of thinking and praying and researching and talking to these people who really know what they're talking about has brought me to, it's a journey. It's not a point. But at the moment, I would say that my view of the Bible is that it is exactly what it appears to be, which is a collection of writings written by fallible human beings about their experiences of God. And including within that are quite a number of passages where they say, this is what God actually said. But one of the things that's come up is, there are these passages in the Bible where it says God spoke and says this. Now, if the whole of the Bible is inspired, are those bits more important than the others? If Paul's just saying, I think this or I think that, which he does, is that as strong as the passage which actually says God spoke and this is what he said? Or simply the narrative passages, are they all equally inspired? And what do we do with the Old Testament that seems to contradict with the New Testament? And why are there two completely different stories about what Judas did with the money? And all sorts of contradictions. And is it true that if the Bible is inspired, then does it mean that the people who wrote it were inspired? The people who decided which books were in and which books were out were inspired. Everyone who's copied it ever since was inspired. And the people who translated it into other languages, including English, were inspired. If not, how can we say it's inspired? That doesn't mean that I'm saying that God can't speak through the Bible, because God does.
John, do you want to just fill in a little bit, because I think you talked about when you were 11, you had a strong, you
this offence of not believing the supernatural. Is there anything you want to add in terms of how your attitude to the Bible might have changed or whatever?
Well, as shocking as it might seem to some people, I still don't believe in the supernatural. I never did. I realised that when I was 11, I think I might have said a while ago. I went, that was long before I studied science. But I think all the people have supernatural experiences. I have the same experiences, I explain them differently. I don't think I can add much more than that, except I'm somewhat comforted by, I don't know where this comes from now, one of the Gospels, not those who call Lord, Lord, but those that do the will of the Father. Of my Father in heaven, they're the people that are going to be recognised by God eventually.
And let's go on to the tricky bits, and Peter, you sort of mentioned some of that. The question is, what things do you find tricky, challenging, difficult, if anything?
Well, I guess, as John was saying, the growing realisation over a period of time, it's not your experience of God or your understanding of God in the end that Jesus was concerned about, though those things are going to drive the rest of you, because it's all one package, they're not separate compartments, but that have you cared for those around you and for the doing thing. And I have a sense that I'm in a place of waiting where the doing it by life has to come into focus in some way. That the experiencing bit and the understanding bit, I don't exactly put me in a drawer, but or if I have, it's not locked. But they're just sort of hanging out in the background at the moment, waiting for me to make sense of what it is I'm called to do. There's a lot of stuff written about, you know, you're not supposed to be doing stuff all the time, you're supposed to be being, and you know, all this kind of thing. You don't think, yeah, well, I've done that. I'm tired of that. I feel like it's time to do some more doing, but I'm not sure what kind of doing. There's sort of simplistic words, but that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, the stuff in the Bible I find challenging, I suppose, is the judgment-y picture stuff where Jesus says, well, you know, where did you do this and where did you do that? And he doesn't really ask you how you understood the Trinity or anything like that. So, anyway.
Tricky, challenging.
As a rational person, I've often found it difficult to find rational explanations for miracles. Joshua's trumpeters blew down the walls of Jericho, but then I discovered that they were made of mud bricks in an earthquake zone, and the archaeologists have dated those ruins long before Joshua could have been there. So the other thing, I find the idea of inerrancy in the Bible is impossible, given the different accounts of the same events. It was not until I joined the Australian Student Christian Movement at the University of Western Australia that I learned about the J, E, D and P sources of the Old Testament. And I found that helpful in reading the Old Testament. It was one minister who came to us at the ACM had all the passages in the Old Testament highlighted in different colours so you know, identified the sources. And of course later I realised that Matthew and Mark had read Mark, before they wrote, and how John was a much later addition. I'm sure all the Methodist ministers who rotated through the, usually got a change every 3 years through the Methodist Church in Netherlands, knew all this. They never, from their sermons you would never know they knew it. And I challenged one minister once, and he said, I can't upset the elders, you know, that one who came by salary, but I can talk to the young people about it. But I still feel a bit disappointed that was the situation. Also, I've just got the comment here that the scholars seem to trace some of the material in the Old Testament to other cultures, the Assyrian and Babylonian and so on. Some of the stories in the Old Testament have come from those sources and been given up. I've got, you know, a Hebrew twist.
I can actually resonate quite a lot to what John just said and what Tim just said. As you go off to seminary and start studying this stuff, you come across all sorts of stuff, which is fascinating. The question is, and I started off by saying that I found the difference between Jesus' teachings and the teachings of people. The activities, the amount of time that Christians spend talking about stuff, and that comes down to what we believe, is extraordinary, as if that was really important. There seems to be some idea around that Christianity is about what you believe. Jesus said, as James pointed out, it's about what you do. You know, Jesus, that's what the two most important commands were, says, you love God and you love your neighbour. And nothing else, you know, comes close to those. Those are the three that really matter. So they're both positive, they're not thou shalt nots, but they're also active. It's something you do. It's not about belief at all. In fact, as I've said before, I think that if you come across the word belief in the New Testament, in the Greek, try translating it as trust first. Yeah. So when Jesus says, believe in me, try translating it as trusting. It's a perfectly different translation, and it often works much, much better. It's not about what's going on in here, it's about what's going on in there. My journey with the Bible since that moment, when those words left, Jesus' words were proclamated, the message then is that my faith has become much, much simpler. I don't need to worry about predestination or the Trinity or substitutionary atonement or any of these things which people write books on. You know, they're not important. We don't know what the answers are. We do know that we have a just, wise and loving God, and that he loves us and looks after us. And that's where the action should be, in our love for him.
Thank you. Last question, Gord, if you have something to say. Is there a part of the Bible which has particular significance for you, whether that's a verse or a book or a passage? And then when we've heard those, we'll have just a few minutes if people want to ask questions.
You mind being first on the
bus? Good on that,
yeah.
The first book that really grabbed me in the Bible was John's Gospel. I guess because of its philosophical kind of framework and its use of language and concepts, but more than anything because of the way it integrated concepts. But it wasn't sort of just picking one bit and seeing it in isolation at all, the way it even worked together. I'm not a text person, though one of my earliest memories of apart from the actual writing, was I had a son, scripture teacher at school, who was also a neighbour of ours, and she gave me a little box with verses in it that we would pull out and read. And I found it was a lovely little scene. In a generation where we didn't have a lot of little scenes, and so anything that was cute and small and interesting was precious in some way. But I was aware straight away that I wasn't particularly interested in any one verse pulled out of the box for itself. So I guess it's always been that sense of the totality. It's one of my jokes on myself that I can say that, but at the same time I can open up the Bible and stick my finger on sometimes in the middle of nowhere, and something will leap out at me and kind of go, oh, yes, okay. So, yes, whatever I think, my experience always kind of gives me a kick from the side and says, oh, what about this? So there are all sorts of bits from all over the place.
Yeah. I suppose like everyone, I go to the Gospels as a sort of faith, but I'm very aware that the, ever since I learned this, I've been very aware of the fact that Paul was written down first, and the Gospel writers, the Gospel not were written later by, obviously, by people who weren't eyewitnesses, so it's... on the tradition. I mean, Paul wrote from the tradition, but he wrote earlier. which, when I realised that, gave me, although he doesn't deal with the life of Jesus, he's earlier, and that has given me more respect for Paul. From the Old Testament, I do, don't read very often, but I do love the wisdom books. Job, the Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Isaiah, for example. Much of it, such as Job and Isaiah, are accumulations of material from various writers over a long period of time. And they're a variable worth to me. But I love to read the struggle, for example in Job, to account for the presence of evil in a world made by a loving God.
I love Job to his ethic. He may actually have been a witness.
I've heard that, that some people say that Mark might have been, and Mark mentioned in the Gospel, but I... my conclusion, they were.
That's a morning tea conversation.
That's a morning tea. Okay. I do love John, and as I said, I love the teachings of Jesus, so I'm going to read. What's the question again? One verse.
Is there a paper Bible?
Of the Bible, but you're not allowed to read a whole book.
Just bear with me a moment. This is a key from Isaiah. It's not the assessment. And I can't find the
passage. You're looking for the passage that purports to forecast?
No. I'll have to paraphrase it. Yes, I've got it. It's okay. It's just for me, it's just the best description of God that I've ever found in the Bible. The section is called "Behold, Your God in this place." It's Isaiah 40, which is a good reading anyway. He will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs in his arms. He will carry them in his bosom and gently lead those that are with young. And that's it.
Thank you. There's always time for questions over morning tea, but if someone has a burning question they would like to ask of someone, put your hand up, otherwise we'll pass back to Bevan.
What's your name?
Thank you, panelists. When I was asking people if they'd be interested to be on the panel, I asked five people and they all said yes, which made me think, am I that scary? But we will probably have another one sometime in the future. So if anyone is interested in being part of a panel, a replay, a panel with the same focus, or if someone has an idea on a panel theme, then let me or Peter know. Thank you.